This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
Sometimes there's so much beauty in the world. I feel like I can't take it. And my heart is just going to cave in.
Hello, you are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lee Chui Lin, Arvind Yuvaraj, and Sharmila Ganesan. It is your weekly triptych serving of movies and pop culture. We are on from Tuesdays to Thursdays at 7:30. And we actually, in the midst of our Star Wars excitement last week, failed to actually kind of take you through what we're going to do, because every Tuesday we're going to do Throwback Tuesday, partly because we're fans of alliteration, partly because it gives us an opportunity to talk about old and beloved movies. But this week, we're actually going to be throwing back to the entire body of work of one director, and that is Sam Mendes. You just heard there, of course, his very first feature film, a clip of it anyway, from American Beauty. And with 1917 coming to our cinemas, we thought it would be a good time to talk about it.
Well, yeah, Sam Mendes is one of those actors, one of those directors, I think, and that clip just reminded me of how, you know, when American Beauty came out, there's nothing quite like it. And I feel like he's continued to surprise with every movie that he's done. You know, he picks genres that you don't expect him to do. He moves from themes and stories that you don't see coming. And I think that's why it's interesting to actually just look at his whole body of work.
He's like a genre hopper.
Yes.
Like, he starts in one place and then you'd think that he'd follow up in the same genre for the next movie, but then he hops genres and then he does that well. Also, I didn't know that he had like a theater background for like a long, long time. Mm. And then looking back, after you have that knowledge and then you look back at the films that he has done, it sort of shows. Sort of shows with the acting, with the camera work, with the way he frames his scenes. Mm-hmm. Then you make sense of his career and how he's looking at the stuff that he's making. Or the stuff that he wants to put on film.
And there's some sense that with American Beauty, and as you said, Lynn, it was his first feature film. It's not the work of a novice director. He's come to that fully formed. It's a beautiful, sophisticated piece of work. And he's brought to it his sort of decades of theater work and just that idea of how to tell a story and to open it up on screen. And, I mean, obviously it did amazingly well.
Yes, it did. I mean, it won him an Academy Award and a Golden Globe, I believe. But also, I mean, looking back at Sam Mendes and his work, this term, this idea of genre hopper is interesting. But I think also the place that he occupies in our director pantheon. You know, when you think about the great directors, when you think about, I suppose, in the modern day, the person who comes most immediately to mind as somebody who works comfortably in blockbusters and sort of intellectual highbrow stuff, who is an auteur, who has a very specific point of view, would be Christopher Nolan. Mm-hmm. Sam Mendes is not Christopher Nolan. He's kind of, I read this thing that kind of said, in defense of middlebrow Sam Mendes. And then it went on to talk about how it didn't mean that as an insult, how you do need somebody who bridges that gap between straight up, you know, Michael Bay blockbustering, and then your slightly sort of more, I don't know, Pedro Almodovar, I don't know, you know, the sort of more artsy, art house, lesser seen directors. And I think Sam Mendes does perfectly occupy that space. And that's partly why his movies have shifted from story to story with not always a very clear through line.
I think it's interesting that you said Christopher Nolan, because he has sort of replicated or emulated Christopher Nolan in one of his movies, Skyfall, which we will get to in a bit. But he also does the same thing for a lot of other filmmakers. In a way, I think it's his inconsistency that makes him the director that no one knows about, like the mainstream doesn't know about. If he had, like Nolan, you would look at a Nolan film and you could sort of splice scenes together and they would still fit. Like, you know Nolan's fingerprints. Sam Mendes doesn't have filmmaking fingerprints in a way. Like, you could never look at a film and go, that's Sam Mendes.
But I do think, though, that there are things that he brings to films. And because we were doing this episode, I kind of revisited certain scenes from some of his movies. And definitely what you mentioned earlier, that not theatricality, that's not the word. The theatre sensibility is very strong in all of his films. Whether you think about the long takes, whether you think about the focus on dialogue, the focus on each character, that's very theater. It's not blockbuster. And he brings that even to a blockbuster like Skyfall, which is why Skyfall felt so fresh when you watched it. Because it felt almost like you were watching a James Bond play than you were a James Bond movie.
For sure. And I think there's also the quality of, I don't know why I want to say the word ingredient, almost like we're talking about a recipe, but there's a quality that I think Sam Mendes brings, not just through himself, but also through frequent collaborators. So I'm thinking here of someone like Roger Deakins, who we are, again, going to be talking about in more detail when we discuss 1917, which is the reason why we're doing this, of course, and how Roger Deakins brings that very particular, very beautiful, very skilled cinematography to life, right? Like, through all of that, I was thinking about this idea of Sam Mendes not being necessarily a known quantity, or not somebody where you're like Steven Spielberg, you know what you're going to get. Having said that, if there's Sam Mendes attached to a project, I'll watch it.
I'll watch it. That's the only reason I saw 1917.
Yes.
I didn't pay attention to that movie before I saw Sam Mendes. And the moment he was attached, I was like, okay, I'll give this a shot. Even though I didn't like Spectre as much, which is his latest or his last project.
Or at all, in my case.
Or at all, yeah. But still, just knowing that he was attached got me interested more than the long take, or knowing that it was like a war film and it's supposed to be like this awards contender. Just having his name there sold the movie for me.
So can we then talk a little bit more, I guess, about why we like Sam Mendes? Because obviously this doesn't come out of nowhere, right? We would have seen his films, and it's a pretty long list of things that he's done, starting off with American Beauty, and then the most immediate follow-up to that was Road to Perdition. But did you guys watch and like American Beauty back in the day?
I loved it. It was I remember my entry point for it was that iconic poster with that the young girl with the rose petals, and of course Kevin Spacey, that voiceover. I loved it. I think I was also at that age where I was just getting my entry into that not indie cinema, but rather the more sort of story-driven kind of films that starred big names. So, mind you, my Kevin Spacey before that was like Usual Suspects, right?
Yeah.
So, it was very different. And this whole story of suburbia and the breaking down of the American dream, it was so fresh at that time.
I couldn't watch American Beauty when it came out because there's no way I could get... because of that same poster, there's no way I could get the DVD into the house. So I had to wait. So I watched it like way later. But I love the movie. I was introduced to him via Road to Perdition first. And I love that as well. And for me, for some reason, I always connected that to like a graphic novel movie. I thought it was like an adaptation. It is an adaptation.
It is, yeah.
But that's not the way you'd sell that movie to anyone. There's so much more that you can get from Road to Perdition. Then
conflicted Tom Hanks.
Yeah. And then that's when I moved on to like his other stuff. When I knew that he was doing Skyfall, I was like super interested. And then he hasn't done a lot, but because of these few films, I sort of fell in love with his work, like in general.
Yeah. So I've read a lot of retrospectives of American Beauty, right? Mm. Because obviously it's a movie that is ripe for re-examination. I loved it when it first came out. I thought that I found it a very seductive and ultimately disenfranchising mm-hmm. watch, right? Which is exactly what it is. It's that push and pull between what you think you want and what you actually get, and how you have to maybe turn away from certain things and the repercussions of that. And so I really loved it. But even then, even so, thinking about it, when you think about Mina Suvari and the role that she plays in this movie and how it relates to Kevin Spacey, and I mean, taking aside what we know of Kevin Spacey now and just all these different things, I don't know if the movie has necessarily aged the way I wanted it to. And I think that's in part because it was influential at the time. So then subsequently, a lot of other people came along and did exactly that, right? Let's explore suburbia. Let's explore even the style of it, the slightly dreamy quality of it, interspersed with very sort of prosaic things. People have done that since. So because of that, weirdly, because American Beauty has had such impact, going back to watch it, its impact is lessened, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It does. But also, it speaks to American Beauty that we keep going back to that film about, you know, the same old suburbia, the dreaminess, talking about the normal people next door and the cruel and unusual things they might be up to. Mm-hmm. The fact that no one remembers the films that came after just speaks to how well Sam Mendes made that film.
Mm. And I think it's very much... it's because of the characters. Again, it's and if that's the one through line that I can think of, every time I think of Sam Mendes, I feel like I'm going to get characters that I not just remember after the movie's over, but sort of identify and empathize with in this deep way. Mm-hmm. Even if they're, you know, a middle-aged man lusting after a teenage girl, there's a sense of empathy in the way he builds his characters, which was very new in sort of that, again, that genre that he was doing, which was bridging both mainstream and sort of a more indie sensibility. And I think that's why people remember it, because you remember how you felt when you first met those characters.
We are talking today on Throwback Tuesday about the works of Sam Mendes, with a particular focus at the moment on American Beauty, because, of course, that was the Academy Award-winning first feature film that he made. And up next, we are going to be talking about how he kind of expanded into more blockbusters, including into a 50-something-year-old franchise. I think you know what we're talking about. We'll be back on Popcorn Culture. Keep it here. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
England. The Empire. MI6. You're living in a ruin as well. You just don't know it yet. If you wanted, you could pick your own secret missions, as I do. Name it. Destabilize a multinational by manipulating stocks. But easy. Interrupt transmissions from a spy satellite over Kabul. Done. Rig an election in Uganda, all to the highest bidder.
Or a gas explosion in London.
Just point and click.
Well, everybody needs a hobby.
So what's yours?
Resurrection.
You are listening today to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila and Arvin. We are talking about the works of Sam Mendes on Throwback Tuesday. You just heard, of course, his first entry into the Bond franchise, Skyfall. By the way, if you are a fan of Sam Mendes's work, or if you particularly dislike him, which I've actually never heard of someone doing, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. And of course, you can write to us at movies@bfm.my. So earlier, we spent quite a bit of time talking about how Sam Mendes kind of bridged the gap between art housiness and blockbuster extravaganza. And I think that actually everything really came together in Skyfall. That is the exemplar of it all.
There's this interview with the Playlist that he did where he spoke about how he wasn't interested in doing Bond films before, but then he saw The Dark Knight, Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight, and how that sort of gave him the idea to make a Bond film, but also make it deep, make it heavy with plot, heavy with story, but also make it a big blockbuster that would make money in its run. So In a way, he sort of used a lot of Nolan's templates to make Skyfall. And that is why I think Nolan won't make a Bond film, because Mendes did it for him.
Yeah, I also think you can actually almost see the trajectory in him arriving at Skyfall. He's always had, if you take, we spoke about American Beauty and, someone like a Kevin Spacey, and then someone like a Tom Hanks and a Paul Newman in Road to Perdition. But also, Leo and Kate in Revolutionary Road, you know, it's basically the what would have happened if they'd survived the Titanic and then everything went to hell.
Truly, that movie is a difficult watch. I mean, yeah. if you yeah. think that watching an entire, you know, ship that was too big to fail go down, mm-hmm. If you thought that was hard, Revolutionary Road, yeah. just two people, but oh, Lord.
In a house that just feels too small for this marriage that is about to explode.
Yeah, yeah. it's insane.
Yeah, but it shows how this is actually what men Mendes almost does. He takes these big stars and stories that you think you know where they're going and then just kind of plays with them in a way that you don't expect and then comes up with a product that is wholly surprising. And Skyfall really is a great example.
Honestly, though, all I can think of after hearing that clip or all I can see is Javier Bardem's face.
I know.
Melting or not?
Both. Just because that initial arrival. So we've been talking a lot about the theatrical sensibility, and the very first time that you see his entrance in that film is deeply theatrical.
Extremely.
That long shot, mm-hmm. that long walk with the little explainer of, hey there, hi there, this is what you could be, you know, is deeply enjoyable. But also you can admire the artistry of it, right? Mm-hmm. Like that moment. And I think for me, Skyfall ranks really high up there in the James Bond franchise. Like all of them.
I would agree.
It might be my favorite next to Casino Royale.
Yeah.
Like it's one of those. It's one of the Daniel Craig ones.
So we're clearly going to do a Bond one some way in the future.
For sure.
where we rank all the Bonds. But yes, let's go on.
You were talking about his entrance and the way he showed up the first time we see like Raoul Silva like show up. And I think that again goes back to his like theater, you know, his work in theater and how he like frames people. Mm. The whole clip is about 6 minutes long. I remember the first time I saw it when he showed up on the first time he makes his like debut. He's talking about his grandmother's island and rats and how they were getting rid of the rats on the island. And I remember thinking, like, I have no idea what he's talking about, but I am just like captivated. Like, I cannot take my eyes off. And I remember that story about the rats, like, even after the movie was done, I'm like, whatever he was saying was chilling. And for some reason, now I know how to get rid of rats on an island.
That I was thinking about that long shot and how it is also something that happens in Spectre, which is the second entry of Sam Mendes into the whole Bond portfolio. I think, Sharmila, earlier you kind of just went, not your bag.
No, yeah. I feel like he, with the high point that was Skyfall.
Yeah.
And then I think with Spectre, they just put in too much. And maybe the expectations were also high, but also it ended on such a difficult note. Skyfall ended on such a difficult note that I almost feel like Mendes should have stopped there. Like, he did a great job. Thank you.
Having said that, and I agree with most of that, I haven't revisited Spectre. I want to, because sometimes when I dislike a movie that I thought I would like, I sometimes feel the need to revisit it. Mm. I haven't actually done that with Spectre. But you guys remember the shot, the long tracking shot that happens with Daniel Craig that takes place in Mexico, right?
Mm-hmm. The Day of the Dead one.
The Day of the Dead.
Yeah, yeah.
And how that is in many ways a precursor for the 2 hours of 1917, because
it
is a single shot.
Yeah.
It's directed by Sam Mendes. It was, you know, lensed by Roger Deakins. So it's exactly kind of the same team working. And so it's interesting. I think earlier you were talking about how you can see him building up to things. And maybe that's something that we should be looking out for with Sam Mendes, how he appears to kind of keep building a vocabulary and bringing it into the next film.
Do you think he's a funny guy, Sam Mendes? Like, do you think that his movies have a sense of humor?
I actually think, I know we're going to do a full episode tomorrow talking about 1917, so I don't want to give too much away, but you know, if you could find moments of humor in a story like that, if you can find moments of humor in a story like even like Revolutionary Road, where there are these little moments where you know, a suburban dad tries to talk to his kids and they ignore him, and it's like, it's really funny amidst grimness. I think he is. I think he has a keen sense of what works. Again, something which I would attribute to maybe knowing those beats that work on stage.
I think he has like a very black sort of sarcastic, cynical, very British sense of humor. There's this interview he did with BAFTA, I think, where he said that he grew up watching a lot of mostly comedy shows on TV. So he picked up rhythm and flow and how to tell stories with people like Buster Keaton or the Buster Keatons of his childhood. So I think when you look at, even when you look at stuff like Skyfall and you see the tension between Bond and Silver, even the sexual tension between Bond and Silver, there's a lot of witty liners in there that don't seem funny on the surface, but if you watch the scene and if you get a sense of humor, they are very funny scenes.
Mm-hmm. And they benefit from an actor like Javier Bardem, who I think really thrives on, even Daniel Craig, who if you see him in Knives Out, you realize is actually very good with humor, and so that's why those scenes work so well between them.
Even the body language.
Interesting that you guys said humor, because I was going to say weirdness. I think that Daniel Craig and Javier Bardem are two actors that thrive on weirdness. Mm-hmm. They actually really like subversion, and they really like playing in that strange hinterland of like, where are we? What are we doing? Doesn't matter. Let's have fun. Yeah. And so they have that quality to them. Sam Mendes, interestingly, I think that he's a really funny guy. I don't see the humor in the films. I think that there is a lot of subversion and a lot of hints of this is actually not what I'm talking about. I'm trying to take you somewhere else. And I get all those different things. I don't, however, off the top of my head, I can't remember watching a scene in a Sam Mendes film and going, oh, that's witty. Mm. Oh, I thought that was really funny. And I put that down to going all the way back to what we think of as his identity as a director. You know, when I think of Sam Mendes, I think of a movie that's going to be very watchable, probably very emotional, and prestigious. You know, that there is a prestige attached to
it. Yes, good word. Very good word.
But I don't necessarily think of it as a witty film. I think that there are different directors who do that better, maybe.
Mm. I want to pick on that prestigious aspect. Is he one of those actors that we think of as making Oscar bait movies?
No, like I don't think so.
He has been nominated for most of them.
Yeah, I think the Oscars find him easily accessible. Like, I think they pick up on his movies because he has that prestige. I don't think he makes movies for the Oscars. I think he makes movies that he wants to make or that challenge him. I also think that he doesn't make the same movie twice. Maybe that's why Spectre didn't do as well as it should have. But I think once he has done something, he wants to hop onto the next thing and find himself something challenging to do. Otherwise, I don't see a reason why someone like him would do like or embark on like a certain project. But Oscar bait, I don't think so. I just think the Oscars like him a lot.
Yes. Again, because of all the things that we've said, because of the safe hands quality of Sam Mendes. You know, it's like when you're watching this film, you know that you're in safe hands. Are you going to be challenged? Maybe not. But are you going to enjoy it? Is it going to be generally a good film? That's a pretty reliable yes, I think. Tell us if you agree with us. Do you enjoy Sam Mendes? You know, is there any particular film that stands out? We've only really talked about a handful, but there are so many that he's done. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. And if you'd like to see updates, some behind the scenes stuff, some thoughts, you can follow us on all the social media things. We are on Twitter. We are on Instagram. We are BFM Popcorn. If you feel moved to write us something longer, that's movies@bfm.my. We'll see you here tomorrow when we are going to review Sam Mendes's 1917. We'll see you back here. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.